How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. Every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Packed with news as we are every week. Tonight is the TNA... I don't even remember the name of the pay-per-view. I won't lie. I've done about 15 shows over the last week, and I've forgotten every single time. I believe it's No Surrender. It might be Turning Point. I'm pretty sure it's not Final Resolution. Regardless, Mike and I are going to preview this show. It's starting at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. And for those of you that are big TNA fans, you probably are well aware that they did not, in fact, announce a full card for the show until this past Thursday night. So... we now have the full lineup in front of us, which, fascinatingly, if you head up to Wikipedia, perhaps will be changed by the time most people even get there. But Samoa Joe is listed as facing, I don't even know what, there is a jumble of random characters here listed as his opponent in the semifinals for the Bound for Glory series. I don't know how or why anybody bothered to edit that, but they did. We're going to talk about the lineup for this show, all of the big matches, and of course all of the news in TNA leading to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Their version of WrestleMania, the biggest pay-per-view of the year for TNA, is coming up, and the winner of the Bound for Glory series tonight is going to get a shot at whoever is the World Heavyweight Champion at Bound for Glory. Who will that be? Is it going to be Austin Aries? Are they going to put the title on Bobby Roode? What is going to happen tonight? We shall make some predictions. Plus, talk about the Impact show from this past Thursday night. Raw from Monday night. We'll talk about last week's show, which, of course, ended with the big reveal that Paul Heyman and CM Punk are in cahoots. Talk about that, plus this coming Monday's Raw, tomorrow night's show. We'll give you some details on that program, plus a bunch of news. We'll talk about Bret Hart returning to Montreal, the scene of the crime. Batista getting ready for a fight. Kurt Angle's going to be calling some fights, in fact. Triple H got a haircut, which amazingly is not the top story, but perhaps it should be. All of that and more coming up after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news is the subject of this show. And Mike, this afternoon it is the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view, is that correct?
No, it is not. It is No Surrender.
Ka-da-da. I don't know why I can't remember this. I suppose when you look at the listing of TNA pay-per-views, it's a lot of rather generic titles. Nothing that really sticks out as anything special, except for, of course, Lockdown and Bound for Glory, which coincidentally are the two biggest pay-per-views of the year for TNA. Bound for Glory pay-per-view is coming up in October. This is the Final Countdown. That should be the name of the show. TNA Final Countdown. The Final Countdown to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. And today on the show, on the pay-per-view, which of course starts at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, it is the finals of the Bound for Glory series. And as much as perhaps I have made fun of TNA in the last 2 minutes here, I do have to say that this year's Bound for Glory series has been a huge success as compared to last year, which was a huge and epic failure. Made fun of on television by AJ Styles, made fun of on radio interviews by Samoa Joe and others. A preposterous tournament last year. This year, it went as well as could be expected. Better! It went better than could be expected. And we are now down to the finals. Bully Ray and James Storm and Samoa Joe and Jeff Hardy. I am, as noted on the Wikipedia page right now, and I don't know why somebody decided to take out Jeff Hardy's name and put in a jumble of random foreign characters, but maybe that's Jeff Hardy's name in another language, I don't know. But those are the semifinal matches leading to the finals of the tournament. So unlike last year, the finals will not be determined by points, but rather who wins in the Final Four here. And Mike, we're going to run down the lineup for this show, and I guess the tournament is the most important part. So let's start with that. Bully Ray and James Storm. Actually, I believe this is incorrect. No, Bully Ray and James Storm is correct. Bully Ray and James Storm, who is your pick to win that particular match?
James Storm.
James Storm, you say.
Obviously, you know, what would have made this pay-per-view easier to remember as far as the title of it would have been if they had driven home the matches that were going to take place on it. So you were looking forward to ordering said event, which is called No Surrender, but they waited on doing any of that until this past week and really didn't even run down the card in full until the very end of the show. So that didn't help matters whatsoever. But it looks like Bully Ray is in the fold, unlike D-Von. He's in the fold for TNA. But as much as I would like to see actually Bully Ray win, even though I don't want to see him win the whole thing, him beating James Storm wouldn't hurt my feelings all that much. Although you still are, in theory, leading up to James Storm and Bobby Roode, or at least James Storm in something important after this whole tournament. And even though James Storm got out to the big lead and there was no drama built up in him getting into the finals because he had clinched it so early, I think he goes ahead and wins this and ultimately ends up winning the whole thing, just a matter if he beats Joe or Jeff Hardy.
Joe and Jeff Hardy is, in fact, the other semifinal for the evening, and this is a rematch of the opener on Impact this past Thursday night. And it was an excellent match, and Jeff Hardy got the win. So if you had to take a pick here, would you say that Jeff Hardy is going to go on to face James Storm, or do you think it's going to be babyface versus heel, Joe versus Storm?
You know, I almost want to give Jeff Hardy credit for that STO that he tried to pull off, Shades of Ogawa, in that match leading into the choke finish on Joe, which didn't, you know, was not exactly convincing, but since it was Jeff Hardy, he gets a little bit of a pass on it. But I'll say, actually, Samoa Joe gets the win, and you got James Storm and Joe just, you know, slamming into each other, and I think you actually get a surprisingly good and at least a fresher final that way.
I think you've got to put Joe over. Two reasons. Number one, first off, Jeff beat him on Thursday, so I figure their even-Steven booking that we see in all wrestling promotions will take over here, and Joe gets the win on pay-per-view. And I think if James Storm is going to win this tournament, and I should add that I think it's possible that anyone could win, and I'll tell you why. Samoa Joe and Austin Aries would be a great match if they keep the title on Aries. You know they could have a great match together. I think it's maybe the least likely scenario, actually, but I think they'd have a great match, and if you've got another big match scheduled for Bound for Glory, whatever they end up doing, if it's not going to be Storm versus Roode, or if you want to do Storm versus Roode with no title on the line, you could do that, and Joe and Aries is the main event. You could do this match. I don't expect it to happen, but I think that would be a good match. Jeff Hardy and Austin Aries, if for no other reason than Jeff Hardy is the biggest babyface star they have right now. And so Jeff Hardy pay-per-views, you can usually bring a pay-per-view, Jeff Hardy, from 8,000 to 12,000 buys. So he would not be the worst choice for the main event slot. Bully Ray. I've always thought there's a chance Bully Ray is winning the entire thing. And that was one of the terms of him agreeing to re-sign with TNA, that he wins the tournament. And Bully Ray and Austin Aries, they have feuded. They have history, and you could build that into a Bound for Glory main event. Or, as noted, James Storm wins, and then you've got James Storm and Bobby Roode somehow, which was the original plan and has been the plan since at least lockdown, when James Storm didn't win the title there. So I think that is obviously the most likely possibility. If you're going to go with Storm and Roode, which I presume that is still the plan, then you need to get James Storm over as a big babyface. You need to get people behind him more than they are behind him right now. And to me, if James Storm is going to win the entire thing, and you want him to come out of this thing as a big-time babyface, bad idea to do James Storm versus Jeff Hardy. Because there's a very good possibility the fans will get more behind Jeff Hardy, and they will be upset if James Storm beats Jeff Hardy, and Jeff Hardy does not win. So I would do Joe versus Storm, babyface versus heel. You've got the storyline where last year in this same tournament, Joe had minus 10 points You recall that by the heaving sigh. So I think that'd be a good story. James Storm and Samoa Joe in the finals. Joe wants to go from minus 10 points to winning the entire thing in the course of a year. And he puts the heat on Storm. Storm makes the big comeback, gets the win. Everybody cheers. Storm is your top babyface heading into Bound for Glory.
Yeah, I like it. And I kind of fell into your camp as far as the idea of the, or at least the possible idea of Bobby Roode and Aces and Eights, and it takes out having to do Storm and Roode for the title because you have the title on Aries. And again, I've always thought you don't have to do the title, even though it made sense to build up to Storm getting his revenge on Bobby Roode for the title when they decided to go in the direction with Aries. I mean, even though it may have only been great for that one night, I still think you get good possibilities out of it. And what you said with Bully Ray, that's a believable feud people would like. Aries and Joe harkens back to a different era for some fans, but at least for newer fans and pure TNA fans, it's a fresher matchup there. And again, as long as Storm gets legitimate comeuppance on Bobby Roode, and I know the angle is not hot right now, but I think ultimately at the end of it, even though it's not as hot as it should have been or could have been, I still think as long as he gets good comeuppance on him, that's all that really matters.
I think that in the end, I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe they'll do a last-minute deal in the pay-per-view where they announce that Aries has decided he will put the title on the line against the Arm Breaker. It, of course, is Austin Aries versus the Arm Breaker in the main event of the show. I figure they've got to put the title in. I don't know. Bobby Roode, having completely disappeared for so long, I mean, to me, it's like he's got to be behind Aces and Eights at this point. And I know that Aces and Eights at one point attacked him, but I think the key to the storyline, the explanation would be that Roode, after not winning the title back in his second opportunity, his final opportunity, if you can't beat them, join them. He went and he joined Aces and Eights and took over as the leader. And I don't know if they'll put him under the mask. I don't know if they'll do some sort of schmoz and he gets the pin and the title. I don't know what they're going to do, but I just feel that he's going to be involved because his absence to me is too glaring an absence. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Football season is starting. There is a chance that here and there the show will be preempted. If it is, I just gave you a list of different avenues in which to listen to the program. You can also add to that the TuneIn Radio app, which is available.
I love that app.
Yep, it's available on the iPhone, Android, number of different smartphone platforms. And with the TuneIn Radio app, you can search for the Sports Byline channel, where you can hear all of the Sports Byline programming, including this show, Sunday afternoons, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. You can plug it into your car, or if you've got one of those gimmicks where you can Bluetooth your phone, do a Bluetooth connection to your car. It's essentially like basically having Sports Byline anywhere you go when you drive. So that's how I usually listen to it. And the satellite radio, of course. But that is the best way to check out the program. So if we are preempted, you can never miss an episode of this show. And, of course, they're always archived later in the evening up at WrestlingObserver.com. So never forget the website, WrestlingObserver.com. Never miss the show. And, Mike, we're talking about another show, the TNA Help Me Out No Surrender. It's taking place tonight. I swear to you. 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, and we're running down the lineup for the show, and my belief that somehow, some way, by hook or crook, as they say, Bobby Roode is going to be involved with Aces and Eights and somehow walk out of the show tonight with the title. I presume that's what they have to do if they're still going with Storm and Roode for the title at Bound for Glory. What are you thinking about tonight, Mike? Do they put the title on Roode tonight? Do they put the title on him on TV? Do they not put the title on him at all? What is going on with Austin Aries and the main event Aces and Eights gimmick match?
Again, I don't think you have to do it yet, to put on at all yet. But with that said, I would wait for TV. I mean, obviously this pay-per-view is not going to do a whole lot of business, one wouldn't assume. And they're at least going to get a solid number of people watching on Thursday. Now, I know Thursday Night Football has started up at the beginning of the season here, even though Green Bay is people from all over the country follow the Green Bay Packers, and their game against Chicago is a rivalry game, and it is a big deal. It's still not as bad as the beating that I think Raw is going to take the first 2 weeks with football coming in, but it's still the best way to get eyeballs and a best way to drum up interest for the next pay-per-view. If they're going to make the title switch, they might as well do it on TV.
We're running low on time, Mike.
We are?
Well, as far as between now and Bound for Glory.
Well, that's true. But again, I think at this point, because of the way everything played out, you really would be, we were talking about this 2 months ago, how it's going to seem like forcing the title back on Roode so Storm can take it. So with that said, with how everything has played out and things still have not obviously, been cinched up, or I don't think they've improved on things all that much. And again, having Aries available to be a good champion and be able to rest a cross-section of guys, I don't think you need to hot potato the title just to, be completely obvious about, this was the plan the whole time, and, we got to have Storm take the belt off of Roode. I just don't think you have to do that.
I think that something has just gone wrong in the whole booking of everything, it feels. I mean, it's not like, I don't mean to make it sound like this is the TNA of old, because the booking could never possibly be as bad as it was under Russo. But the whole Aries title reign, at the time, I thought it was a great idea. You establish the gimmick that the ex-champion can cash in the belt for a title shot every year. They established it by giving Aries the belt. Aries is a great worker. I thought, we could have something here for the time being, But I didn't think that they should take the title off him after a month. But at the same time, I thought if you're going to do Storm and Roode again at the biggest show of the year, it needs some time. And if you have Aries successfully defend the title on the next pay-per-view, then you've got less time and less time and less time. And that's exactly what's happened. And if Aries had like a wildly successful title reign, it would be like, okay, fine. You kind of taken some heat off the Roode Storm thing, but hey, the Aries thing was an experiment and it worked out great. But to me, the Aries thing is an experiment that hasn't worked out great. I mean, it's not like it's been a disaster or anything like that, but like you could see that the fans aren't as into Aries as they were before he won the title and when he won the title. They listen to him talk. I think the problem is it's too much talking from Austin Aries as champion. Austin Aries, after he won the title, he should be beating dudes on TV every single week. And instead, I think he's had like one match, and it was with Bobby Roode, the title defense on pay-per-view. I don't even know how many matches he's even had since he won the title. It seemed like a very lackluster title reign, and it's a lackluster title reign that seems to be taking heat off Roode versus Storm, if that's actually where they're going. And again, I don't even know where they're going anymore. And I don't think it's a good thing that I don't know, because we're a month away from the biggest show of the year.
I think they got caught. I think they went longer than, I just, everything kind of got screwed up for them with Claire Lynch and that whole thing, and maybe pushing that further than they thought they were going to push it, and then ended up getting caught with her quitting and them bailing out of the story. But the length that they went with it, it wasn't, to me, it just the timing of it, was bad anyway. Joseph Park, they had an idea to go one direction. They ended up holding that off, which that's ended up being for the best. But I think a whole lot of things kind of happened to them Pope getting hurt leading into this, where I'm going to give them a break, and then the lead into to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view, that's going to be more of a thing for me, because with the direction that they've gone in, they still have my faith for right now. They got dealt some bad hands, and I think they've made some wrong moves. But with that said, I still at least have faith, at least going into the next pay-per-view. I'll give them at least that much.
All right. According to the best of my knowledge, Austin Aries has had two matches since he won the title. He beat Bobby Roode for the belt. They had a match on Impact, which ended with Aces and Eights running in. And then they had the pay-per-view rematch. Those are the only matches that Austin Aries has had as champion.
Yeah, and he has talked too much. And you know, this is a small thing, and it may be a dumb thing to some people, but him in the tight shirt holding the belt about to interrogate a guy, just it comes off so goofy. It came off a little bit too much like playing pro wrestler, which is really annoying too, because again, he's got a really good mouth, and he, you know, it's just, again, that's been, it's been too much of that and too little of what he's really good at, which is making himself and other people look pretty damn good.
Yeah, he doesn't have a world champion look, really, based on his size. I mean, my God, Hulk Hogan just absolutely towers over him. And I don't really think he's got, like, world championship caliber mic skills. He's good on the mic. Sometimes he's very good on the mic. But, you know, heavyweight champion of the world caliber talking, I really don't think so. He is world caliber, world class in the ring, but we haven't even seen him in the ring. So it kind of feels like, why did we have to keep the title on him for an extra month if this is what you're going to do with him? He's a storyline character. So I don't know. I we'll see. We'll just see. I don't know what they've got planned for Bound for Glory, and we'll know more later on tonight. So this is actually a subject probably best dealt with next week, when all of this is has wrapped up. We do have the Austin Aries, Aces and Eights. We talked about that. Tag Team Championships, Daniels and Kazarian against AJ and Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle, one injury after another for this fella. He's blown out his hamstring God knows how many times this year, and he suffered some sort of injury about a week and a half ago. I know that he was... they threw him in a tag match, not this weekend, but the weekend prior. And then between the weekend prior, where he was in a tag match because he was injured, and this week, apparently got injured again. So I'm almost certain it's his hamstring. It's some sort of leg injury, and he's blown out his hamstring God knows how many times. So I'm sure it's the hamstring again. But he is scheduled to team with AJ against Daniels and Kazarian. He did come out before the house show on, I believe, Friday night, and say, I can't work due to my injury. I would presume he's still in the match. They can try and hide him. He is Kurt Angle. He'll probably tape himself up. A healthy Kurt Angle teaming with AJ against Daniels and Kazarian would be an awesome match. An unhealthy Kurt Angle, I don't know, if he stands on the apron the whole time and AJ does all the work, still could be a pretty darn good match. So hopefully this one works out for the best.
Yeah, I really hope so, too, and I really like the idea of Kurt Angle and AJ Styles as a team. I mean, it worked before anyway, when they first won the titles. You know, people responded to that, and again, with AJ's not getting any younger, even though they try to portray him as, you know, a young TNA star, you know, over and over again. He's been doing this a long time, and Kurt Angle's body being the way that it is, and just the fact that all four of those guys could have great interaction, and you could draw this out for a really long time if you wanted to. You could do 3 months with those guys if you felt like it, and I don't think it would get old, and people would not, you know, have one problem with that whatsoever, and they wouldn't miss a beat doing it. So I think it's a really good idea because, again, they can hide Angle tonight, you know, save him from his injuries a little bit, and win or lose, and I would say lose, you know, in some nefarious fashion. I think you could draw this out, and it would make for some really good TV and some really good stuff leading into Bound for Glory.
Young, fresh-faced superstar AJ Styles is 35 years old, so that makes him older than the vast majority of the current WWE roster. So we're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com and via the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Just search for the Sports Byline channel. Listen live every Sunday afternoon, even if we're preempted on your local satellite station or your local Sports Byline affiliate, you can still hear us at WrestlingObserver.com or the TuneIn Radio app on the Sports Byline channel. You can also hear us every single day at WrestlingObserver.com. Daily radio shows, anywhere from 10, 12, 15 shows per week by myself and our various hosts, as well as thousands of hours of audio in the archives. Every single show that we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. If you sign up today, it's essentially as if you signed up in 2005. You can search our interview archive. Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Mick Foley, Steve Austin, the list goes on and on. Some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts have been guests on the show, and we've got a lot of big-name guests coming up as well over the next few months. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. I've said it a million times. If you love this show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live, and you only get to hear the show one time per week, you are missing out on hours and hours of audio every week and thousands of hours of audio available in the archives for your commute, your workout, wherever you like to listen to your audio, work, all sorts of great places. And Mike, we are talking the TNA pay-per-view. Turning Point. Did I get it right?
No. No surrender.
No surrender. I swear to God, everybody, this is not a running joke. I cannot remember the name of this pay-per-view. But it is tonight. I do remember, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. We are running down the lineup for the show. And we've talked about several of the matches, including the young fellas here, 35-year-old AJ Styles, and I believe 41-year-old Christopher Daniels, who Vince Russo often pushed as the young rising superstars of TNA. Both work like young rising superstars. I should add that. Two of the best workers in the entire company, but certainly not young stars. But should have a great tag team match. Daniels and Kazarian against AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. You can all look forward to that tonight. As well as, Mike, Miss Tessmacher and Tara in a legitimate real-life teacher versus student match.
I think the question is, will Taryn Terrell be the referee
yes,
to this match?
Of course. She is the knockouts referee.
Money well spent.
Mm-hmm.
I miss Tiffany, so I'm happy.
How do you miss her? You see her every Thursday now.
Well, that's true, and since I'm not paying her salary, I'm completely fine with her standing there in that outfit, completely fine with it. I would assume Miss Tessmacher will win this just because really no reason to have Tara win, and obviously they've done some little bits of advertising with Tessmacher, and obviously those direct TV or direct insurance ads, which at some point we'll have to start with her. I'll go with Tessmacher.
A question that I don't have an answer for, and I doubt you either. Actually, I bet you have a pretty good answer, but it's not the right one.
Good.
Why did they hire Tiffany?
She looks good in that referee's outfit.
Taryn Terrell, everyone, is the former Tiffany of ECW, the WWE version. ECW on Sci-Fi Fame, she was the GM. And they got rid of her for a number of reasons. And she went out on the indie scene and wanted a preposterous amount of money, got no bookings, disappeared for a while. So a couple weeks ago, Brooke Hogan, in what was quite the irony, now that I think about it, did the most wooden announcement in the history of wrestling explaining to us that Taryn Terrell was the new head of the knockout division, the new referee, replacing Earl Hebner, so there would be no shenanigans. And out comes Taryn and my buddy Vinny, who just 1 week earlier on the Brian and Vinny show, we had been playing ECW Tiffany drops because they were so funny. And he laughed uproariously every time Tiffany was on his television. Taryn Terrell came out, and Vinny had absolutely no idea who she was. They introduced her as Taryn Terrell. They never said she was a former ECW GM. They never said this is the former Tiffany of ECW fame. They did not in any way identify her except by calling her Taryn Terrell. So that begs the question, Mike, why did they hire her?
So they could get Drew McIntyre's phone number after he's released?
That's not the worst explanation I have ever heard. Although most likely she would give them the wrong number, because I'm sure she doesn't want to work with her ex.
Well, maybe, I don't know, maybe she's got a modeling gig in Orlando or something like that, and there's some sort of just, it's a marriage of convenience thing or something like that. Was Lagana there when she was there? Possibly, maybe at the beginning of ECW, I have no idea, to be real honest with you. I don't know. Finally, Jimmy Jacobs had a match with Kevin Steen and Steve Corino in North Carolina to justify his existence on the ROH payroll, because I like Jacobs. I just could not figure out why, in a company that could use some saving of money, why you would have so many guys there who just serve to just stand there. So I just don't know when it comes to her if there's just... This isn't just more of a marriage of convenience somehow.
Well, I know that Jimmy Jacobs, I guarantee you, earns less money than Tiffany was asking for on the independent scene. And I think that goes for every single solitary person on the ECW in the ROH roster as well. Presumably somebody smartened her up, because if they're paying her what she wanted on the indie scene, they're completely, absolutely out of their minds. And as you noted,
if you had to compare that number from what you heard to a star somebody would know from the indie scene, what would it be?
Double.
Jesus.
And actually, that'd be a big star.
God.
But anyway, the point is, you mentioned, well, she looks good in those shorts. That is correct. However, if nobody knows who she is, this is the point I'm getting at. If nobody knows who she is, and as noted, Vinny had absolutely no idea who it was, and I would bet a lot of wrestling fans had absolutely no idea, and maybe still have absolutely no idea who she is. If nobody knows who she is, you're telling me you can't find another hot blonde that looks good in booty shorts in Orlando, Florida? You're obviously not looking very hard.
Yeah, this is true, and it's amazing as Gail Kim came out on last Thursday's Impact, and she is an incredibly beautiful woman, an incredibly nice body, whole nine yards, can talk, can actually wrestle a little bit, and is married to a guy, and again, I don't know the, tie-ins to this or how much synergy you could possibly have with the Restaurant Impossible show and the guy she's married to, but you would think they would want to use stuff like that more, because it's, right there in their lap, than going out and spending a whole lot of money for a really hot blonde who might be a little bit crazy, but at least looks good in that outfit.
So you're telling me that they should have brought in Chef Robert Irvine to referee the women's division?
I could handle him yelling at Eric Young and ODB, sure.
Mm. So anyway, that's the match.
Dude is huge, by the way. That's like Flo Rida showing up on WrestleMania, where somebody's got to be salivating looking at that guy.
Well, he's
how
a cook.
Get him in to make money.
Of course they're salivating. He cooks.
Well, that's, yeah, but I mean, did you see the guns? What if Vince saw that? Vince saw that, Gil Kim would have had no repercussions at all for rolling out of that Battle Royal.
You talking about Robert Irvine?
Say what?
You talking about Robert Irvine or Flo Rida?
Robert Irvine.
He's got big guns?
Well, the dude is actually massively huge, to the point where he almost looks odd because he's got this...
How have I never actually... Now that I think about it, I've never even seen Robert Irvine. Now I got to Google him.
Dude's huge.
Let's see here. How about that? He is a pretty hefty fella.
And a big, fat Scottish accent, too. I don't know what it is, too, because, like, you know, he's from Scotland, and Gordon Ramsay's from Scotland, and Scotland is known for some of the worst food on the planet, and these people somehow escape and then end up telling other people how to run their restaurants and make food. It's amazing, really.
He kind of looks bit like a little bit, a little smaller version of a bespectacled Batista.
Yes. And with Batista being a fighter now, there needs to be somebody to come in and fill his role. Some sort of doppelganger, since Batista doesn't like the PG era.
Oh, about that. I had actually never seen a picture of Robert Irvine before. Dude
now,
is jacked.
Think about it, though. Think about those two together, and you look at Gail Kim, and you just, can you imagine what kind of kids they're going to have? Some wacky-looking kids.
Actually, I don't know what kind of kids they're going to have, Mike. I never thought about it. Should I go to one of those sites on the internet where you put in two photos and see what their kid looks like?
Actually, yes. And then this is the time that I wish we actually had some video technology for this from the byline.
I just can put it up on my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez.
That would be good, and I could retweet that with my Twitter, at Semper Vivi.
How about that? Here's a picture of Robert Irvine on his honeymoon with Gail. They appear to be in ancient Greece, actually. Yep, they're in Athens. They took a guided tour of the Pantheon.
Hmm.
Or the Parthenon, I'm sorry. Anyway, what the hell were we talking about here?
TNA,
No Surrender?
Tiffany.
No Surrender. That's right, Tiffany. I don't know how I segued into Robert Irvine. Anyway, we've got Rob Van Dam and Magnus. That's a battle of the ages right there. What do you think of this match? And what do you think of how they set it up on Impact?
Obviously it was just like, it seemed like a last-minute rush thing there. Magnus jumping on Joe and then him and RVD. I really like Magnus. I don't know what the deal is with him as far as staying on a consistent push level. But if everything works out okay, I'm completely fine with this. A match against RVD, I mean, I trust Magnus as much as anybody to try to get the best RVD match you can get out of the guy. But I hope this, you know, again, RVD doesn't have to win this, and they do need new stars, and Magnus is a guy, again, people, you know, I'm one of those ones that for some reason like the guy, so I'd like to see them do a little bit more with him, and the only thing that makes sense is him being RVD.
And Zema Ion and Sanjay Dutt, who has not been seen on television for weeks and weeks and weeks now.
Yeah, this is another thing. They've wasted time. I mean, they could have built up to the fact that Sanjay Dutt would be getting a rematch against the guy that he fought so valiantly against and, you know, had to break out everything, including, you know, Precious's old spray can to spray him in the eyes when he had dislocated shoulders. So I think they've kind of blown it with this because, again, that match was really good. Dutt had a really good story, and they just kind of let him drop off into nothingness here. So looks like they put this one together at the last minute, but I would figure Zema Ion gets the win.
I have no idea who wrote this description here on Wikipedia, but it says, another storyline on the card features Rob Van Dam going against Magnus. After Van Dam was eliminated from the Final Four, Magnus mocked him in backstage by saying that Van Dam can't reach the bar anymore and isn't the man he once was, which resulted Van Dam punched Magnus in the face, and they start fighting until security, with a capital S, run in to separate them. That is a horrible sentence!
It is Wikipedia.
Hmm.
I wonder how RVD feels about Ryback having his spray-painted outfit.
That's a good question. I wonder if he's even noticed.
I'm sure Mick Foley did. Mick Foley pointed that out.
Somebody, I'm sure, has tweeted him about it. All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've got a lot more to talk about here, including an interesting fact, an interesting tidbit I've culled. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the last hour talking the TNA No Surrender pay-per-view. We ran down the lineup. The show starts at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern on pay-per-view. And myself and Dave Meltzer are going to be up later on this evening with a full rundown of the show. I wanted to mention, interesting little tidbit, Austin Aries is scheduled to face the man known only as the Arm Breaker tonight on the show. And, Mike, you do know that there is a wrestler who has an Arm Breaker as a finisher.
Funaki?
Bobby Roode.
Oh, see, I was going to say, like, Kendo Koshin. Yeah, but, oh, yeah, Bobby Roode. And this would make the most sense, actually. Whether it makes the most sense or not, it's got to be Bobby Roode, because it's got to be somebody who you reveal after a while, and I'm not saying in this match, but as far as the leader of Aces and Eights, that you can make somewhat of an impact with. I mean, the former Drew Gallows, the Wes Briscoe, guys like that, it's not going to matter. Jeff Jarrett, even, I think, is going to get a groan, but at least he could hold up to the acting portion of the gig if they decided to go that route, but... because of where this thing is at right now and the fact that they're going to have to pull the trigger on something soon, Bobby Roode, again, makes the most sense. Now, whether it's the former Luke Gallows tonight or not, I guess we're to see. And who knows, since it's Aries against any member of Aces and Eights, will they pull something out of their hat where it starts with one guy and God knows Aries might have to face more than one?
Well, we'll find out. Show starts in just a little while. 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 Eastern, on pay-per-view. And, of course, as noted, Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up later on tonight with a full rundown of the pay-per-view. And if you don't happen to be getting the show, Dave is going to be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. So if you head up there and click on the story after the pay-per-view starts, you can get all the results as the show goes on. Who is going to win the Bound for Glory tournament? Who is going to be the champion coming out of the show? What is the main event for Bound for Glory? We'll find out tonight. Back in just a moment, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by the man himself, Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, up at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour talking about TNA. Tonight is their pay-per-view, No Surrender. Believe it or not, I got it right that time. 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 Eastern, only on pay-per-view. Dave Meltzer will be doing live running play-by-play on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. And later on at WrestlingObserver.com, Dave and I are going to be doing a special radio show running down all of the results of the program, all of the angles leading to their biggest show of the year, Bound for Glory. We'll find out tonight who wins the Bound for Glory series, and we shall find out tonight who will be the champion. Perhaps we'll find out tonight who will be the champion going into Bound for Glory. And, Mike, you watched Impact shortly before we went on the air, and I thought a fine, fine program in terms of professional wrestling action.
Yeah, actually, the wrestling part of it was fine. It just, again, going into it, knowing everything was all bunched up and crushed up together and we were going to see what matches we were going to have for Sunday, that was the biggest reason to watch. I don't think the Aces and Eights thing came across all that incredibly well or anything like that. But when you have, you know, again, when you have Daniels and Kazarian in action, you know, it sometimes it may not be enough to save the entire show, but it's enough to give you at least a little bit of positivity.
When we come back from the break, everybody, we're going to start talking about Raw. We've got a lot of news from last week's show, including the teaming up of Paul Heyman and CM Punk. That was the closing angle as the show went off the air. They are a duo at this point, and that is interesting, because Paul Heyman had shot down rumors, allegedly, of the two of them teaming up earlier on this summer, and he had an explanation as to why it made no sense for them to be together. And interestingly enough, he was correct, and now they're together. What does this mean? We'll talk about that after the break. Plus, we got a lot of news to talk about today. Not a lot of UFC news since 151 was canceled, but we'll talk about some stuff. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have been talking a lot of pro wrestling here today. Mixed martial arts, slow at this point. Last big show was scheduled to be UFC 151. It was canceled, so obviously there's not a lot to talk about there. We do have some stories to talk about later on in the show, including the upcoming mixed martial arts debut of one David Batista of WWE fame. Now, before that, we got Raw from last Monday to talk about, and when the show went off the air, CM Punk and Paul Heyman appeared to be a dastardly duo. And as it turns out, Paul Heyman has, in fact, re-signed a new deal with WWE. He is going to be a regular on television. He is going to be linked with CM Punk. Now, this is interesting because there were rumors earlier this summer, coincidentally, or ironically, or perhaps neither word is appropriate. Interestingly enough, the Cranky Vince Twitter, which is a Vince McMahon parody Twitter, it is put together, I do not know who. I don't know who is responsible for it, but I have been told that it is not one person, it is several people, and at least a few of them do in fact work for WWE. Of course, this is top secret because these people don't want to be fired, but sometimes the Cranky Vince Twitter is just preposterous, oftentimes, and sometimes it breaks news. And there was a tweet by Cranky Vince this summer about Paul Heyman begging to be linked with CM Punk and this and that. And Paul Heyman, at one point, addressed rumors that he and Punk were going to be together. And he essentially said, this makes no sense. I am best served as a mouthpiece. And CM Punk, of all people, does not need a mouthpiece. And here we are. It is now September. And CM Punk and Paul Heyman are together. And Paul was right. CM Punk does not need a mouthpiece. So the teaming of Punk and Heyman together is interesting. Where is this heading? What does this have to do with anything, with Brock Lesnar, any of this storyline, the Triple H storyline? I guess we shall see. But Mike, what are your thoughts on the Paul Heyman-CM Punk duo?
Hey, I like it. One for CM Punk, I mean, they need a big mega heel. They don't have one right now, and he fits the bill fine. And, yeah, even though he doesn't need a mouthpiece, Paul Heyman is great as far as getting a negative reaction from the crowd, and he's very good at what he does. So the fact that he's there and teamed up with Punk, do they need each other? No. But for the Lesnar storyline to continue, Heyman's got to be there, you know, fanning the flames and poking the bear every once in a while. And him being there with Punk gives him, a reason to be there. And to me, it's a great tandem to have going. And if they add in Big Show or anybody like that, if they choose to down the line, that's not going to hurt my feelings either. It's good all the way around. One of the things you can lament WWE is, you know, the managers. They do not like managers, and even when they have good ones, like, you know, Ricardo Rodriguez being a great example, and hopefully they've softened on that, and you know, people like Paul Heyman are incredibly needed to get the story across, especially when you're in the position you're in, and you have so much time to fill.
Let me ask you this question. I had predicted shortly before it happened that CM Punk could be turning heel. And that is what happened. And we never really discussed if it was time. I don't think we have. But CM Punk was a very hot babyface, obviously. And now he's turned heel. And they're trying to get him over as a heel. I feel they have not done their best. To me, when you're going to turn babyface or you're going to turn heel, you just got to go all the way. And I can remember there was a period where Randy Orton was a heel and he was starting to get over big. And it was starting to feel like if they turn this guy, I don't want to say, and I remember saying this at the time, I didn't want to say he was going to be the next Steve Austin, but it really felt like if they turned Orton babyface at that time, he could be something big. And I seem to recall that they turned him, and then they didn't, and then they did, and then they didn't. And it was kind of that back and forth thing where is he babyface, is he heel? And he never got that reaction again that he had before they did that. And I've seen many times with different guys where you kind of sort of turn a guy, but you kind of don't. Give you the example of CM Punk. You know, he turned, but then he did a lot of matches where he kind of worked as a babyface, and he cut promos saying he wasn't a bad guy, and he kind of fell into tweener territory, which is often death. You know, fans, if they don't know what to think of you, it's hard to care about you. You know, you're not a babyface, you're not a heel, you're flip-flopping back and forth. That's the easiest, the quickest way to get people not to care about you. And I don't know if it was that, or if it was just too early to turn him heel. It just feels to me like this hasn't caught on like it could have, or it should have. I don't know. What are your thoughts in terms of, did he turn too early? Did they do the turn wrong? Is this just the best they can get at this point with a heel? What are your thoughts on the CM Punk heel turn?
In a way, it's kind of the best they can do with the heel right now. I mean, they don't have the want to just let the whole thing organically play out. There are going to be people that are going to cheer CM Punk against The Rock or against John Cena, regardless of anything that they try to do. And in fact, the more they try to, as it showed with Cena, to push the 50-50 thing, it just ends up damaging both guys instead of helping the one you're trying to artificially pump up. So because they don't have the patience to do that, I mean, this in a way is kind of the best they can get, is by going in this direction, because, well, we got to have the white hat and we got to have the black hat, and if CM Punk's going to be wearing the black hat, this is the best way to go. And at least with Paul Heyman by his side, he can continue to be smarmy. He can continue to say things that are true, but say them in a way that has him coming off prickish and heelish. And, you know, the whole thing with the biggest waste of all of this was the Jerry Lawler thing, because even though I'm sure Punk got to live out a fantasy by facing Jerry Lawler in that cage match and doing a little bit of a thing with him, it just, again, that was the weakest part of the whole thing, and it was just, that was too phony. As far as, you know, well, CM Punk's a bad guy, look at what he did to Jerry Lawler. I thought that was completely unneeded, and if they just would have done something else and then led into the Paul Heyman thing, I think that would have been more than sufficient. But that's, unfortunately, with how they think about things, that's their mindset, and I think that's the best they can possibly get. And you talk about the stop start with Orton. I mean, look at DiBiase, look at Cody Rhodes, look at Alberto Del Rio, look at lots of guys who they just, you know, completely stop start on them multiple times, and they cannot seem to get anything right because they fly by the seat of their pants.
A couple of days ago, TMZ broke the story, so to speak, that Triple H, they said, had shaved his head. That wasn't exactly what happened. He got a haircut. There's a story, I believe, in the Stamford Advocate, which claimed it was a $1,000 haircut, which has to be part of the storyline. I'll get into that part in a minute. But Triple H cut all his hair off, and it was an angle. I mean, it was a real haircut, but he just happened to be in front of Titan Towers. He just happened to be photographed by somebody from TMZ. He just happened to be posing with two fans, one of which was wearing a Triple H t-shirt. It was a posed, planted story and picture, and it's part of an angle. I don't know exactly what the angle is, but I presume the angle is simply that Triple H is really retiring. So he does what everybody does when they retire. He's cut all of his hair off. He is now a suit. He is not getting back into the ring. And this will, of course, lead to the rematch with Brock Lesnar. At this point, looking to be at WrestleMania of next year. Now, there's a lot more to this story, and we're going to kind of get into it after the break. But a lot of questions about Triple H and Brock Lesnar and the match and the dynamic. And we're going to broach that subject with Mike when we come back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour, actually about the next 40 minutes, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking Triple H's haircut. Top story, breaking news. Triple H cut his hair off, and Mike, Hunter has cut his hair, and obviously the angle is going to be something to the effect of, the man is retired, and when people like Edge and folks like that retire, they cut all their hair off, so this is proof that he's not stepping back into the ring, the fact that he cut his hair, and of course he is going to end up back into the ring, and as I talked about in the new issue of Figure Four Weekly, which is up right now for members at WrestlingObserver.com. There has been a little bit of kind of unspoken tension was the term that was used to me regarding Triple H and his role as a babyface. Apparently, Triple H believes that he is a much better heel than babyface. This, by the way, sounds familiar. His idol Ric Flair has always thought the same thing. Hunter feels he's better as a heel than a babyface. Vince McMahon insists he remain a babyface. There's a lot of unhappiness about this on the Triple H side. He kind of felt vindicated at SummerSlam when he had the match with Brock. Brock broke his arm, and instead of everybody cheering for Triple H, they chanted, you tapped out. Kind of felt that was proof that he's miscast as a babyface at this point in his career. Vince obviously feels otherwise, but point of all of this is, one person suggested to me that you could do a double turn. You have Triple H go heel. You have Brock Lesnar go babyface. And you do the rematch with the opposite dynamic. Brock is the babyface. Triple H is the heel. So with Paul Heyman and CM Punk now a unit, I suppose that could lead to the storyline where Brock ultimately comes back and early 2013 and just says, what about me, Paul? You know, you've left, you're hanging out with CM Punk, you've taken over the role, you're the manager of the champion, what about me, blah, blah, blah. He goes off on his own. There you go. I don't really like the idea in the sense that if you're going to do the rematch, obviously Triple H is going to get the win, and Triple H is a heel beating a babyface Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I don't know about that idea. But stranger things have happened. Mike, what do you make of the entire situation, everything that I've just talked about?
Yeah, I don't remember from the picture. Was he still wearing the cast now that he's gotten his hair cut?
You didn't see his arm.
Oh, shoot. I'm really curious as to that one, because that's all I know if he's truly taking this seriously or not. The haircut is one thing, but are you at least wearing the cast? You know, to do a double turn, I think, is insane. I just, for the reason you just mentioned, too, with Triple H getting his win back, that, to me, makes no sense whatsoever unless you've signed Brock Lesnar. You know, you've hooked him up with a different deal after this, and he's going to be a regular part of things. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever for that to happen. Doesn't mean you have to love Triple H or anything like that, but to do a double turn, I think that would take way too much work, way, way too much work and way too much reconditioning of people that they're just not going to be able to do.
Actually, looking at the photos right now, now that you mention it, he is wearing a suit, so you wouldn't be able to determine whether or not he has the broken arm gimmick or not. So I presume that if he had taken the jacket off, he'd have a gigantic cast underneath, of course. So there you go. Also on Raw Monday night, we've got a pay-per-view coming up in the next couple of weeks. And we've got somewhat of a lineup. And we got one more show this coming Monday night. It is the go-home show. And we've still got, we got a lineup here. What is the name of the WWE pay-per-view that's coming up next, Mike? Trick question.
It is Night of Champions.
That's right, Night of Champions. And the matches that we have for the show thus far include a main event of John Cena and CM Punk. Yes, they are still feuding. Keep in mind that this feud has been going on and off for well over a year now. They're going to be facing off for the WWE title. We've got Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio for the World Heavyweight title. And we've got Layla versus Caitlyn for the Divas title. And one more show. It's kind of like TNA in the sense that we're about to have the go-home show, and we still only know three matches for Night of Champions. And, Mike, what do you think of the top three matches for the show thus far?
I think, is there possibly a way we can get Layla and Caitlyn actually wired up with microphones while they wrestle their match?
I hope not.
And are you kidding? I'd actually pay $50 for that.
Hmm. I don't know if you're going to get that. And I don't know if you're going to get a good match. Most likely not. I would not be surprised if they added Eve to that match. For those of you that have not heard the story, it actually was never supposed to be Caitlyn and Eve for the Divas title at Night of Champions. During that big Battle Royal, the number one contender's Battle Royal with the women, which Caitlyn won, she was actually not supposed to eliminate Eve. Eve was supposed to take a flip bump and land on the apron and then climb back in, of course, and end up winning. Well, Caitlyn tried to clothesline her over, and Eve didn't make it all the way over. So Caitlyn tried again, and Eve tried harder, but she tried too hard, and she flipped all the way over and landed on the ground. And that is why time stood still. That is why Layla looked shocked at the finish. And that is why we've seen Caitlyn have horrible match over horrible match on TV for the last several weeks. So Eve being inserted into the match to make it a three-way would not surprise me one bit.
Which, you know, a good timing, too, with the role that she's playing of being, I guess, somewhat disingenuous and trying to be nice to everybody now and coming off winning that Stars and Stripes thing or whatever it was on NBC. Good timing for her to come in and then go ahead and win the title from Layla.
Eve won Stars Earned Stripes, an NBC show. They never promoted it on Raw because it went head-to-head with Raw. Oops. But she is the winner, and they immediately started hyping it up on WWE.com, so I would expect them to make mention of it on Raw Monday night. And that is a potential addition to the Divas Championship match. CM Punk and John Cena, there's two possibilities. You ready for this, Mike? Either CM Punk wins or John Cena wins.
Well, they should have a double disqualification.
I guess you had that. I struck you dumb with my... what I was trying to say is we talked about a couple of weeks ago. It all depends on what they decide to do for WrestleMania. The original plan was John Cena versus The Rock Part 2. Then there were discussions of, what if we did John Cena and The Rock at the Royal Rumble, and we did The Rock versus CM Punk at WrestleMania? So, I presume we're going to find out which direction they're going next week. Because if CM Punk wins, I expect him to hold the title through the Royal Rumble, at which point Rock would beat him, and then go on to defend the title against John Cena at WrestleMania. Or, you have the John Cena championship win next week, and then Rock beats him for the title at Royal Rumble, and CM Punk faces Rock at WrestleMania. I would presume, because of the linking of Paul and Punk, that it does not make sense for Punk to lose a title right now. So I would guess John Cena is not winning, but anything is possible. Mike, which direction would you go?
I would go with Punk holding on to the belt. I think that the title reign means something in his case. And with how it's been presented, and it, by the time he gets to the Royal Rumble, I think it would be like the fifth longest all time or something like that. So whether he loses it there to The Rock or whether he, you know, they decided to do Rock Cena and not bother because of being in New York and they don't bother having it be for the title, I think it's, you know, to have Punk continue to hold on to it, I think makes the most sense. And again, they've started something with Heyman and with him anyway, so have him do something to screw Cena in his hometown, which he'll probably get booed in anyway.
Sheamus and Alberto Del Rio. I guess we'll find out. Yes?
Oh, no, I was going to say, again, with longer reigns, I like what Sheamus has done, but if you're going to do it with Del Rio, it might as well be now.
Yeah, we shall see. They're obviously doing a storyline involving Ricardo Rodriguez. He was booted by Sheamus And they're selling it like he was injured, and that now Otunga has successfully gotten the brogue kick banned, which I guess would be a story if not for the fact that that Sheamus has been winning matches anyway with the Cloverleaf, Texas Cloverleaf. But there's one more week of television to add a twist to this match. I would not be surprised if, like, Otunga ended up referee, or Ricardo ended up referee, or maybe it'll just be that the brogue kick is banned, and if Sheamus uses it, he loses the title. You could do a deal where Sheamus brogue kicks Alberto, knocks him out, loses the title via DQ, and then Ziggler immediately cashes in on the unconscious Alberto and wins the title from him. And then essentially you have two challengers, because Sheamus never really lost a belt, so he's a challenger. And meanwhile, Alberto got pinned by Ziggler when he was unconscious, so he would have an argument that he should be the champion. You could do three ways. So, could do that. I figure that whether it happens at the pay-per-view or on TV, that Ziggler's getting the title soon, if only because he's been doing a million jobs, which is kind of how they do it nowadays. You do a bunch of jobs leading up to becoming the champion of the world. So I guess that's a possibility for that match.
It could be. I don't know where Randy Orton stands in all this, too, but could you see Alberto winning the belt and then going on to lose it to Randy Orton down the line here?
Randy Orton is going to be hit and miss for the next couple of months because he's shooting a movie for WWE. But it is very possible that, you know, Orton could be next in line for Ziggler after Ziggler wins the title and Orton comes back from the movie. We'll talk more about this after the break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and you can use the TuneIn Radio app on your iPhone, your Android, whatever smartphone you're using. Check out TuneIn Radio. I make nothing from this, by the way. I'm just telling you how to listen to the show since it is football season, and here and there this program is going to be preempted on satellite and maybe on Sports Byline affiliates as well. So if you tune in and unfortunately for you, you can't hear this program, lucky you, actually. You can listen to it on WrestlingObserver.com or get the TuneIn Radio app and find the Sports Byline channel, and you can listen to this show every Sunday, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific. At 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern tonight is the TNA pay-per-view. And Dave Meltzer will be doing live running play-by-play of the show up at WrestlingObserver.com. And then later on this evening, myself and Dave are going to be doing a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. If you're a subscriber, $10.99 a month. If you sign up, you get radio shows pretty much every single day. Sometimes, as was the case this past Thursday, 4 radio shows in one day. No shortage of audio. Anywhere from 10, 12, 15 hours of audio a week. Thousands and thousands of hours of audio in the archives. We have every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 in our archives right now. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Ric Flair, Bret Hart, who will be on Raw tomorrow. By the way, Bret Hart is returning to Montreal. We'll talk about that here in a bit. Mick Foley, list goes on and on. All available in the archives right now, plus new shows as well, Observers, Figure Four newsletters. Check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. You'll find there's a lot of stuff that you can't listen to unless you're a member. Well, sign up and you've got it all. There's a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows on the right-hand side of the page. Sample them. And if you like what you hear, which is pretty much exactly what you're hearing here, sign up and you'll never run out of audio. Pro Wrestling MMA fans, number one site for your audio needs, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, we were talking about the WWE Night of Champions pay-per-view and Randy Orton's involvement or lack of involvement. He's got a movie, 12 Rounds Reloaded, that he is doing for WWE, so he's going to be out of action. He'll be in an action, he'll be out of action, depending on the filming schedule. He'll make some Raws, he won't make others. Maybe make some house shows, won't make others. He's been doing a feud on television with Dolph Ziggler. They have traded wins. It is likely that when Ziggler wins the title, he will feud with Orton for the belt when Orton comes back full-time. That is a possibility down the road. But for the time being, it looks like some combination of Ziggler, Sheamus, and Alberto Del Rio.
Well, I guess I can live with that. It's, you know, and again, I've been a proponent of the long reign on Sheamus, even though some people think you've missed the opportunity with Dolph Ziggler and he and Alberto Del Rio and he. But I think that it is time after the last pay-per-view, the way that it finished, and again, in a different era and portrayed differently. I actually liked the ending to that match. It just on that show, in the time frame they're in now, I didn't think it was a good idea, and I just think it's probably time for you to go ahead and pull the trigger and go ahead and put the title on Del Rio and continue to let this thing play out with David Otunga and Rodriguez.
Is it time to pull the trigger on unifying the IC and US titles? I know we've talked about this a million times. These belts are useless. I have absolutely no idea why we need two secondary titles. I don't even know why we need two world titles. This is another matter entirely. But I feel that Night of Champions would be a fine night to unify both belts. Have Antonio Cesaro put his title on the line against, is it still Santino, or did Santino lose that belt?
No, Santino lost that one to Cesaro, and then it is The Miz.
The Miz, that's right. My God. That tells you everything you need to know about the secondary titles right there. I watch this every week. This is my job! But yes, we need to unify these titles.
Absolutely. They probably, to be honest, though, with Cesaro and The Miz both having the belts, and it's not like it's a match I want to see, even though Claudio could get The Miz through it, fine. Do it at WrestleMania. They might as well go ahead and build up to it. They it doesn't mean anything now anyway, and it's been such a joke. I would actually do it for WrestleMania. Go ahead and whoever the winner is, and just call it the Intercontinental title. They don't like things they didn't create anyway, and just go ahead and do that and get it over with.
I did a show on WrestlingObserver.com Saturday with Dave Meltzer, and one of the topics we discussed was Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara, their tag team. They're currently teaming together. And last year at WrestleMania, the company wanted to do a Rey Mysterio-Sin Cara match, and the idea was that they would try to set the record for the most people wearing masks at any one place at any one time. So obviously they'd be selling Mysterio and Sin Cara masks and try and get everybody to wear them during the match. And obviously that didn't work because both guys were out on the injured list, the DL. And now it appears they're maybe building towards that this coming 2013 WrestleMania. Now, Dave and I were discussing, how do you do this? What do you do? Do you turn Rey Mysterio heel? Do you turn Sin Cara heel? Do you turn either of them heel? Do you do a babyface versus babyface match? How do you break up the team if they end up teaming together? What do you do here, Mike, if you want to put together Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania?
To me, I would just go babyface versus babyface. I mean, if you really wanted to put the time and effort into it, you can take the mask off Mysterio, and really, it doesn't really matter because he's taken the mask off at WCW before, and you can still sell merchandise. It's not the optimal thing to do, and realistically, I don't have enough faith in them that they could get enough heat and everything pumped in to a Sin Cara Rey Mysterio mask versus mask match where they may actually make it count. It don't hurt either guy. I mean, yes, is it possible it can be done? Sure it is. Do you trust them to do it? I don't, so I wouldn't go ahead and do that, but I would, why not have them go face-to-face and have a good match and just, build up that these are two Mexican superstars who are going to be in New York City, and you can go through the whole thing, the old stuff from Madison Square Garden where they did not allow mass wrestlers, for years and years into the 70s, and then Mil Máscaras, who is a prelude to these guys in the WWF, and you could build up a story that way, and then try to go ahead and have at the new Giants Stadium, all those people wearing the mask, and I think that's a good idea. I mean, what else are you going to do with either guy anyway? Where could they be utilized any better on that show? It's a good merchandise thing. It's a good thing for the kids and the whole nine yards. So I would just go ahead and have them, again, just try to create a story somehow where they're just both, it's a mutual respect sort of thing, and they're doing it for the people.
You know, one thing about the mask, it's funny, I've been to house shows, I've been to live events, and Rey Mysterio, of course, is he's hurt a lot. I don't know if you've noticed, but there have been times where Rey has been out of action for an extended period of time, and I go to a WWE event, and the Rey masks are all sold out, and there are kids everywhere wearing the Rey Mysterio mask. So, to me, if you wanted to do mask versus mask, and you wanted to unmask Rey, if Rey got unmasked, you could still have Rey come down to the ring wearing his mask, take it off when he gets in the ring, and wrestle his match. Kind of like a guy wears a ring jacket, you know, Rey would wear a mask and he would take it off. Like Kane wears his welder helmet and he takes it off. And I guarantee you would still sell millions of dollars in masks over the next 10 years. So the mask is important, but I don't know. I think that Rey doesn't need the mask. And I think the only problem is that if you're going to do a babyface versus babyface match, then I don't see any reason to put the mask on the line. To me, you put the mask on the line if, for example, you you know, you've got a babyface and a heel, and they do a feud, and at the end, they blow it off with a mask match. But if you're just doing babyface versus babyface, I don't see any need to put the mask on the line. You can very easily just do a you know, just do a match, nothing on the line. It's just, you know, we're both a team. But man, here's a dream match that people would want to see at WrestleMania. It's a once in a lifetime chance. Let's do it. But I guess it depends on how they decide to do it, and if they do, who they decide to turn heel.
Well, yeah, and you can always do the mask versus mask match after you get the reaction of the people coming out of the face versus face match, where you just have a straight up match, and then you can see what, you know, kind of happens from there. Again, because like you say, it doesn't really matter too with Mysterio, because they're going to sell masks no matter what. But they could actually just go ahead and wait and kind of, because again, when it comes to Mysterio, how long is he going to be around for? He's already got multiple strikes against the wellness policy, even though time seems to take those away. How much time does Rey Mysterio really have? And again, with the mask already being off in WCW, I know this is just the slimiest, most marketing, non-traditional pro wrestling way to look at things, but you know, again, with the amount of time you have off Mysterio, is it time by the end of 2013 where you're going to want to release a 3-DVD set of his entire career and try to pump that for as much as you can, because realistically, his body is going to give out for good sooner or later?
I want to make sure before the show ends today that we talk about Batista. October 6, 2012, Big Dave Batista will be facing Rashid Evans. Not Rashad Evans. You're going to hear that line a million times between now and October 6th. He's going to be facing Rashid Evans in his mixed martial arts debut. He appeared on MMA Uncensored Live on Thursday night, set a ratings record for that show, talked about how he'd been dropped for the first time ever in practice a little while back by Stefan Bonner. He has brought in, I believe, Stefan Bonner and Rich Franklin. He is training with legit guys. He has trained various martial arts for much of his adult life. A lot of stand-up arts. He recently got into jiu-jitsu. He's a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu blue belt. So he has trained. He is, however, 44 years old, which is a little old to be starting mixed martial arts. A lot old, actually. 43 years old, I apologize. And this will be his first fight. He's going up against a guy who does have a record. Not a great record, but he has won some fights. He has beaten some guys. And Mike, if you had to make a prediction, do you believe that Big Dave Batista beats Rashid Evans on October 6th?
No. No, he was dry. It's not like Stefan Bonner's got hands of steel or anything like that. And you know, I'm going to take the guy who's the actual fighter right now over Batista, and it's not that Batista's not a tough guy or anything like that, but he's a 44-year-old novice, and I know he loves it. And you know what? He may not even care. This is not a situation like Bobby Lashley where, if Batista loses this, he may be completely fine with that and just love the damn thing so much. I mean, he owns a gym, for God's sakes, and a Gracie one at that. So he may love it so much where it really doesn't matter to him at all. But realistically, I mean, you know, again, no offense to him or anything like that. Even though the guy may be a can and he may be a setup opponent or anything, I'll go ahead and go with him.
Rashid has one win. He got a 10-second TKO victory. And he has two losses, his two most recent fights. Both via decision. These were amateur fights, so three-minute rounds. And Batista is 0-0-0 in mixed martial arts with no amateur fights. So it'll be an interesting deal. I know that Batista is very serious about this. Obviously, he would have to be because he's essentially, some would argue, putting his reputation on the line by taking this fight. And it is something he's always wanted to do.
What does Booker T say about that?
He could ask him one of these days, in fact, once I read his book. But we'll talk a little bit more about this after the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the Batista, the Big Dave Batista fight debut, which is coming up on October 6th. Dunkin' Donuts Center, Providence, Rhode Island. He'll be facing Rashid Evans in his first pro fight. And as I was talking about before the break, Batista's 43 years old. He's always wanted to fight. He's got an opportunity here. He obviously wants to do this. He wants to do it at least one time. And this is his chance. I think that's the whole deal. I think that he probably knows his reputation is on the line. I know he probably knows that if he gets destroyed quickly, that could affect his bargaining power if he wants to return to WWE. But I think the bottom line is that he's always wanted to fight. He's at the age where he better do it now if he's ever going to do it. Here's an opportunity, and he's going to go do it.
And good for him. I mean, honestly, good for him. He's not Herschel Walker. He's not any of those guys. He's a big blown-up guy, but you know what? He's a fight fan that loves it so much that he's dedicated himself to training in it and taking the step to be in a real fight. And, you know, again, you know, Mike Coughlin, who's on the site, there's a lot of things that you can say, but one of his greatest things is, you know, actually having that, you know, that one real fight, that and it's a big step. And most people, you know, it's easy to talk about it, but it's a hell of a thing to go out there and do it. And the guy loves the sport that much where he just wants to give it a shot. So he's going to give it all he has. But again, 44 years old, completely different ballgame here, I guess we're going to see.
All right, everybody, we are completely out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll have a lot more news coming up next week. The TNA pay-per-view is starting in just moments on pay-per-view. Dave Meltzer and I are going to be up later on tonight talking all of the results, how this leads to Bound for Glory. We'll talk about it next week here on the program as well, plus preview the WWE pay-per-view, which is coming up next Sunday as well. Don't forget Raw tomorrow, Montreal, Bret Hart making a return to the scene of the crime. All I know from the WWE side is it's going to happen at the top of the hour, and they don't know which one yet. A lot of work still to be done on Raw as of the time we are talking to you. So we are out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tomorrow should be a lot of fun. We'll talk to you again after a while.